Alright, hello and welcome to another episode of Toy Power. I'm Trent and I'm here with Darren and Ben. Gentlemen, welcome to the episode of Toy Power.
Good to be back, Trent.
Thank you very much, Trent. It's great to be back with both yourself and Ben and our loyal listeners.
Yeah, and so today we thought we'd talk a little bit about New York Toy Fair 2017. And I guess we're going to start with an area that is probably we're all pretty passionate about, which is Masters of the Universe. And it's a pretty exciting time, I guess, for Masters because there's been quite a long drought since the transition from Mattel to Super 7. And at the start of the year, we started getting some images and information from Super 7 about what their ultimates are going to look like and getting into, I guess, what the continuation of the Filmation is going to look like and the continuation of the classics. So now we've got a pretty robust picture of what we're getting. So we've probably got about half of the lineup for 2017 revealed. And so we thought we'd talk a little bit about our thoughts as to how Super 7 are going with what they've done to date and where we think that line is heading. And I guess, share in some of the excitement because there was some really exciting stuff to come out. I think for me personally, what was probably extremely exciting was seeing the continuation of the vintage, I guess we'll call it sort of wave 7 or wave 8 of the 5.5-inch action figures, so continuation of that line. So, yeah, what did we think of these reveals?
Look, I think for me, after having such a long wait, the biggest thing that came out of the reveals for me was the sense of diversity in what Super 7 are offering. They've offered the, as Trent said, the classics and Filmation stuff, which we were expecting, and some Powercon stuff that we'd kind of been expecting as well. But the 5.25-inch stuff, wave 3 of the reactions, and even some of those my tussles and little cheer figures. I think there's been a lot of reveals that I wasn't expecting, and a lot of buzz. I mean, Brian Flynn from Super 7 said when he was talking to Pixel Dan about there being a long time since we'd seen this much Master Universe stuff around, and he's right. It seems to be, they seem to be going full throttle on this, which I'm loving, and I just got that sense that he has a real soft spot for the vintage style line too, the 5.25-inch, which is really nice to see.
Yeah, I was extremely excited as well. Vintage toy line has always been close to my heart, so it's absolutely fantastic for me personally to see that continuation. So we saw the four figures, and there's a lot of speculation how She-Ra is going to be portrayed, with the new Red Rock explosion backdrop, card back and things. So there's opportunities there then for the cons and things to produce the She-Ra on a Princess of Power card later on, and then potentially, for argument's sake, they might even take it further and put Hordak on a Princess of Power card. I'm just speculating there, but once you've produced the figure, you can do whatever you want, and that could be up to the fans out there to who've got that talent to customize and print off their own Princess of Power. So to have that, and to have She-Ra, a nice looking Filmation She-Ra, in the same style as Teela and Evil Lyn with the solid hair, fall in line with the vintage characters, I think that's a huge win. Also, Eldor and Hero are coming out in vintage line, so they've only ever been prototypes and things, and for them to actually be coming out, and Brian was passionately talking about how they're sourcing the molds for those, and they might be sourcing an original. I forget which one.
Yeah, they've got the Hero mold, they've got access to
it.
They've located an Eldor mold, but I don't think there's an agreement that's been put in place to actually access that at this stage. So they're looking at, I guess, options of going from the pictures potentially on Eldor, but Hero will be based on the original prototype mold.
Yeah, so that just that dedication alone, very exciting. And the fact that they are going to be sold in retail stores, that's quite exciting. Down here in Australia, we've just recently seen the Son of Zorn figures pop up in our local collectible stores. And I, for one, I'm not a huge fan of the show. I haven't watched it too often. But just a homage to a He-Man figure, a vintage He-Man figure, I just absolutely had to have it. And it's just so exciting for me to walk into a local shop and be able to purchase it off the shelf, not pay any shipping, not pay exorbitant international fees and all that. So I can only hope the same thing. I can just walk down to my local collectible store and there'll be He-Man on the pegs there. So I'm truly excited. This is, you know, something we haven't seen since the 2000X days. And I really hope that this brings in new fans as well. So yeah, that's huge in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it will. And that was some really exciting news, as Ben touched on, was the fact this is going to be a retail line. So it's not an online exclusive. You'll be able to, in theory, go down to the local store and pick it up. And I guess that did raise the questions as to what sort of stores are going to carry it. And we've got, I guess, a bit of a rough idea here in Australia that that will look like the sort of specialty stores, potentially comic book stores, or I guess any stores that have currently carried Super 7 or Reaction lines. I guess that's the flavour of sort of where that might head. I mean, but sky's the limit, I guess. In theory, we could see these maybe showing up at some of the bigger retail chains like your Kmart's or your Target's. In theory, I think it's less likely, but wouldn't that be amazing?
That would be dream come true.
A mass market retail store and see this stuff on the pegs.
Because already what I can see the issue here, and I think I've had conversations briefly with Trent on this before, I certainly, and maybe Ben as well, I certainly hope that we do see them here locally in collector stores. But I do have some concerns that if we don't see them in, or if we do see them in local collector stores exclusively and not on the Super 7 website, where would that leave people living in country and more remote areas who've previously been able to access Masters of the Universe stuff? I'd like to think that it isn't just something that would mainly be contained to capital cities. So if it's not going to be in things like a Big W, Target, Kmart, or in the US or Walmart or someone, then you know, some of those smaller regions might, you know, they might be looking at the secondary market, which would be a little sad.
Yeah, it would. And I think, look, the Masters community is a very strong community, so you hope that within there you'll have friends and fellow collectors helping you out if you are in that situation. But best state of play would be to have them at that mass market retail level, and only time will tell. I suspect that, you know, potentially Brian hasn't even had those sorts of conversations yet, or if he has started them, I think they're probably still within the negotiation stage, and nothing is set in stone yet.
It sounds like we're still a while away, despite the fact that some of those figures are looking awesome. It sounds like we are quite a while away, at least a year before we start seeing product. Because Brian alluded to the fact that Hero and Order would be the first two. We didn't even see them.
Yep.
And it sounds like a deal's still being worked out on how Order would be done. What we did see, as Trent and Ben mentioned before, was a Filmation coloured Hordak and a Filmation design Shearer that's very true to the vintage Masters of the Universe line, but we also saw Filmation He-Man and Skeletor figures. The He-Man and Skeletor probably looked, and perhaps Hordak probably looked a lot further along than the Shearer.
Yeah.
So, but given that they're not first cabs off the rank, it seems that we could be waiting a while. So I tend to agree with Trent. Deals probably haven't been done, or, you know, certainly not locked in at this stage that we are in the early phases. But gee, what an exciting time! You know, those four figures look sensational, and to think that, you know, in a year to 18 months, we're all going to have access to a vintage Shearer that blends in perfectly, vintage style Shearer that blends in perfectly with our vintage lines, that we'll be able to display with our vintage toys, put into vehicles, play sets, create battle scenes with, that will look incredibly seamless.
Yeah.
And I know Ben talked about the possibility of con exclusive Shearer card and Hordak card, which on a Princess of Power card, and I think they're both great ideas. But I've always thought it'd be kind of cool, little homage to Filmation, if He-Man ended up on a Princess of Power card, because he was in the card in like 20 episodes. And also there was the Christmas special crossover, and Shearer's appeared in so many Masters of the Universe lines post the Vintage line.
Yep.
2000 X as an exclusive, the Classics, and now this sequel to the Vintage line, that it does kind of seem like the next step would be for the brother to guest star in her line.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. I hadn't thought of that, but that definitely has a place. While we're on cards, I guess we didn't see here on Eldor in terms of the sculpts. We just had the pictures of them from the 87 catalogue. But I guess it does beg the question. They were sort of put in front of the Vintage Rock Burst red and blue style card. And we know that there was a new Powers of Grayscale prototype card, which had quite a different colour scheme. We talked about it on a previous podcast where you could already see they were printing the some of that image on the back of the mini comics, and they were going to turn that sort of face forward in the blister, and that would complete the image. Again, so I guess their thinking at this stage is that Hero and Eldor will come, and the continuation of the four we mentioned are going to come on the Rockburst blister. Do we, what do we think of it? Is there a big call for Powers of Grayscale card, maybe as an exclusive, or you just go Red Burst, Rock Burst all the way? It's got that iconic imagery that we want to see continue.
Yeah, I think for continuation of the line and the sheer attention grabber for the regular person walking past in a collectible store, I think the red Rock Burst is a no-brainer.
Yep.
Because if you see all six characters sitting on the shelf and you haven't been a collector of He-Man for 30 years, that's just gonna, you'll just swipe them all six, in one hit. I think the Powers of Grayscale card back is a fantastic call, but I think it'd be more directed to the power cons and things later down the track, and possibly if the line does really well, re-release them at a later stage on the, for those people that potentially may miss out, or who knows, like you could re-release them in 5 years' time to say, here's series one again.
Yep.
And here's the different card backs, just to give the original collectors a different flavour, so to speak.
I absolutely agree with Ben on this one. I tend to think, now I've wanted a vintage style hero in order for a very long time, so don't think I'm talking down these characters or the decision to bring them out so early in the line, but if this is going to retail stores, even just collector stores, they don't have the same name recognition that He-Man, Skeletor, Hordak, and Shearer has. And the Powers of Grayscale card back probably has even less recognition than those two characters. So I'm all for having a very familiar, eye-catching style of packaging that grabs people's attention, particularly people that haven't been following this news and don't even know this line's coming. I'd even go so far as to say that it wouldn't hurt to have at least another character or two released simultaneously with them. Ben alluded to the six. The way Brian's been talking, it sounded like Hero and Order might come first. I'd be kind of keen for at least three or four, two other household names to anchor that wave. I'm just as in favour of Ben's six, actually, because I think that would be a really awesome wave. If you think about it, Hero, Order, Filmation, He-Man, Filmation, Skeletor, Hordak, Shearer.
Yep.
To me that would just be iconic. But if I think six is too many at a time, then they probably need to think about whether or not three or four are viable, because Hero and Order are going to really appeal to people like me who can't wait to get them. But a lot of people are going to be like, who? What?
Yeah.
But that packaging does negate some of that concern as well. As far as whether or not we get the packaging down the track, I would love the line to be successful enough for it to be offered down the track as a exclusive, or as Ben said, as a refresh to put them back out later on if time's passed to offer them again. it's a case of watch this space. I can understand why they're not going up, starting off with them that way, though. I think that would be a huge, would have been a huge mistake.
Yeah. Quick question, just while we're on here on Eldor. In fact, I've got two thoughts. One, the importance of Vac Metal, and I guess I just want to get your thoughts on that. I mean, for my take, Hero has got to come with the Vac Metal armor. And then also just thinking, just more of a side point, but I've been so intrigued by what that holographic book that Eldor comes with actually does and how it works. I wonder how accurate they can get that to what its intent was, or whether they'll try and recreate something now. You know, do they have access to essentially what that holographic book would have been? Because I think my view is that the
Book of Spells
was going to be a sort of central plot device to how the world's connected, how Pre-Eternia might have connected with Eternia.
We've seen a bit of card art that has popped up online that, correct me if I'm wrong, was actually revealed on He-Man.org by none other than Jordan Hembro of Toy Collector fame. But my understanding around that was that it was a plot device to almost rewrite the concerns around or intentionally or unintentionally around the massive divergence of continuity that Masters of the Universe has, in that basically it seemed to indicate each time Eldor accessed that book, it could tell the story in a different way.
That was going to be maybe their crisis on
Infinite
Earth style of...
crisis on Infinite
Earth. How do we pull this mess together?
Yes. But that would have been actually cool. DC should talk to Mattel about doing a run on that after the Thundercats crossover finishes.
Yeah.
But... yeah, look, I'd be interested to see how that plays out. And I'd be interested to know if there's a prototype that exists, because it sounds like there's at least a couple of different prototypes for Eldor. One's been declined and another one's in negotiations. So I'd be interested to know if there is a version of the Book of Spells, vintage Book of Spells, that exists, and just, you know, what is known about that beyond that card back. To answer your question on Vac Metal... generally, I'm not a huge fan of it. I keep thinking of how easy the paint rubs off, and it's just not what I call user-friendly at all. And I have a bit of a problem with it. Having said that, I have hunted around, and I have found, you know, some brilliant examples of Hurricane Hordak and Flying Fist He-Man with the Vac Metal. But I'd want this hero to be as faithful to what it was going to be in 87-88 as possible. So I wouldn't want them to deviate at all. So I'd say keep the Vac Metal. Maybe use it very sparingly on future figures.
So I'm pretty, I have a custom hero that I bought off someone. I don't know the original sculptor or the painter or anything, and it does have a fairly good Vac Metal armor on it, and I think if they can replicate this home job that someone did, I'd love to shout them out on here, but I don't know who they were. I think it can be done, and it should be done, and it needs to be done. And I think going back to the Son of Zorn figures that I've just picked up, it's actually got a adult collector 15 plus, in small letters, on the toy. So if anyone under 15 plus, if anyone under 15 buys the toy, goes around, runs it through the mud, runs it through the sand pit and things, and the Vac Metal comes off, well, this is not a kid's toy. It's for the adult collector.
Yep.
And therefore, the Vac Metal will hold it displayed on your shelf. But if you're going to run it through the sand pit, if you're going to handle it, hold it all day in your sweaty palms and things, and then after a week wonder why the Vac Metal's faded, you've sort of gone over and above the intention of the Super 7 producing it for the over 15, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, yeah. It does.
Yeah,
it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and look, I guess when I look at my classics, obviously we got a Vac Metal on the Hurricane Hordak chest, but when they went and did the Flying Fist He-Man Terracore Skeletal 2-pack, they went away from the VAC metal.
True.
Yeah. And I believe if you think about how it was used on the vintage figures, it was basically a solid cast chest piece that the VAC metal was applied to. When we got to classics, they were using an armor piece that would go over the torso. In the case of Hurricane Hordak, it was a softer armor. Terraclaw Skeletor, I believe, had a more of the snap-on style of armor. So I think they ran into problems when they tried to apply the VAC metal to the softer armor. The Hero sculpt looks like it is a fully formed chest piece that is sculpted. There's no armor piece that looks to go on the top. I could be wrong, but that's the way it appears to me. So I think you've probably got a bit more luck attaching it to that rather than a soft piece. So that might have been sort of where they were heading with their thoughts on classics, that if you were continuously moving and flexing this armor off Hurricane Hordak, even from a collector's point of view, that might diminish the look of the VAC metal. But I think when I look at those figures, that's probably, in my opinion, a weakness of those figures that was a strength in the vintage line. But I get why they did it, so you know, I don't have a problem. So I guess my view is if they think they can do it and have it retain the look and quality within the figure, then go for it. If they've got concerns, I guess then maybe we have to settle for a sort of gold style paint.
Yeah. And just on the Book of Spells, I'd be happy with a hologram. Like I'm not picky.
You're a hologram man.
I love holograms. I hope it exceeds what we got with the Maddie Collector one, where it was a blank book. You could open it and it was just blank. I think there was a big opportunity missed there. If there's a little hologram and it's a picture of Castle Grey, the homage of the skull that Hero sort of represents, I'd be more than happy with that. Maybe changing colours, like that was the 80s. You know, that's basic hologram. You look at Supernaturals. You look at I can't remember the name now. I was only looking at them. Not Power Lords, but the other
Visionaries.
Visionaries, that's the one. You look at those sort of toy lines with the. They were right up there with the holographic usage, and that was their action feature, so to speak. I think it's something as basic as that.
Yep.
With today's hologram technology, it that would tick that box, because the only way you're going to see it is if you open it, open the figure up and open the book up. I don't think it's going to be on display, open when you buy the toy.
Yep.
It's going to be that extra, you know,
and that's cool
excitement for the people that do open
crank
the toy.
It out. Yeah, great. I guess if we think to where, and I just want to talk a little bit more or put this out there in terms of the cards. Huge amount of respect for what they're doing with the Ultimates. So for those of you who haven't heard, I guess Super 7's first figures that they're going to put out, and they've taken pre-orders on these, or which I guess have sort of that pre-order window has closed, and they'll be looking to manufacture those and ship those in the next 3 months. But the amount of attention that went into reproducing vintage style Rock Bursts cards and creating, I guess, a cover for a new mini comic style that they're going to put in there, and that's going to be the cross sell when you open it up and take the, you know, the mini comic out. It's going to be a card insert that has, you know, a mini comic on the front and the cross sell on the back. But the attention and detail that's gone into, I guess, reproducing that, I think Val's done some colouring. Nate? Yeah. Nate Barch that's done some of the artwork. There's been a lot of people involved in reproducing that. And I guess when we talk about the card art for the 5.5 vintage style continuation, I guess I was thinking that they, you know, Wave 6 certainly was putting in the little comic version or the little on the front of the card,
the image,
the little image of the character you're getting. And I know we saw it sort of kick off with the leaders in the Hurricane Hordak, Thunder Punch, Flying Fist He-Man, Terraclaw Skeletor wave, where you get that little cartoon.
It was also on the Thunder Punch He-Man,
Thunder Punch,
Dragon Blast Skeletor. I think that was the wave where it debuted.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I guess, seeing the, you know, I guess we saw prototype pictures of those four that we talked about, plus Hero and Eldor. The vintage style four had sort of the rock burst and then the little yellow burst that sort of said, you know, from the TV show as featured in the TV show. But I guess to me, continuing those little comic book style representations of the characters on the front would look great, and I think it would be a nice homage to where that was heading in terms of the vintage line. Any thoughts on, I mean, it maybe from what we've seen doesn't look like they're going to go down that path, but any thoughts on whether that could come maybe later or would look cool, or should we just go back to basics and get that vintage style?
Definitely look cool. And it would definitely be a signpost of extreme observance of continuity of where the line left off. I don't think anyone can dispute that. I guess it comes down to cost and practicalities, whether or not they think it's something that's viable to essentially produce that for every single figure that's coming or not. And I wouldn't know the ins and outs of that situation. Super 7 may not yet. It might depend on how well the line actually does. Do I think they can get away with not doing it? Absolutely. You know, I love the whole line and I mourned it when it ended and I can't wait for it to start. In my mind, it should never have ended, and I was with it when it ended in Australia at least. But the mainstream wasn't. Most people probably don't even know that they were doing that at the end of the line. So, and if they knew about it back then, they probably don't even remember it. They probably don't have the cards. They probably haven't revisited it. If we're talking about hitting the nostalgia buttons of seeing it in a collector store and feeling familiar, it's probably going to resonate more if it doesn't have that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because most of the line didn't. And when the line was at its strongest, it didn't.
You bring up a really, really fascinating point, Trent. There's a couple of things. For me, it's definitely not a deal breaker that it potentially doesn't have the pictures on there. I think you're also talking to a niche market of mint on card collectors.
Yep.
Who has them in front of them and can remember. Hey, remember in wave, you know, 6 they had the images. Whereas for myself, I've got a you know, complete loose collection, and I don't remember the images. So if I dare say 90%, and this is just a, you know, pulling a number out of the air, 90% of the fairly dedicated Masters fans will probably not lose respect that they don't have the image. But in saying that, I think it'd be fantastic if they did. And also, there's no, they don't have, you know, like, remember in the 2000X when we got the DVDs, they used to put little postcards in them. I think that'd be a fantastic opportunity. Instead of reproducing a full mini comic, why not just put a little images, maybe, you know, just a screen cell or something, not a proper screen cell, you know, a cell, but just a picture of that character from one of the cartoons or something, can just, you know, drop that in there. A simple mass reproduction postcard size picture of that, just of the character on a white background or whatever, and that can be your little image, so to speak, if you so choose to open the toy. There's one of many possibilities.
Yeah, and there's so many talented artists. I mean, we talked about Nate and some of the amazing work he's doing. I mean, he's just produced some phenomenal work for Four Horsemen in their Mythic Legions Kickstarter, which has been phenomenally successful. So, yeah, plenty of, I mean, I've just to touch on one person that's doing some amazing stuff, but, yeah, there's no shortage of Axel Jimenez and the likes of those guys that are doing some amazing stuff. What other figures beyond those 6 do we want to see? So yes. I'll ask that question to you guys now. If you could pick, you know, and pick a number, you know, of how many figures, you know, you want to list, or the themes or the sorts of figures that you'd want to get in that continuation, feel free to air that now on the chance that, you know, Super 7 or the powers that be that can make decisions are listening.
Hopefully they are. For me, Grey is an obvious one. It was, you know, it appears by all information to have been the third Powers of Grayscale thing in that line, in the Secret Identity of Hero, for those who don't know. The other things I would be incredibly keen on are not limited, but include Queen Marlena and a Adora to round out the royal family. I think that would be really, really nice. And I'd also be keen on things like Shadow Weaver. And, you know, I could, again, that could be an entire podcast, that topic.
Yep.
I reckon quite easily. But, I mean, they're things that spring to mind, like, instantly without even having to think.
Now, I'm going to be that A-S-S-H-O-L-E of the trio, and probably to our hardcore fans out there, I'm going to say the laser light and the laser power figure. And the Giants, only because they were only released in such a limited area of the world, that being Italy and, you know, those parts around. But I wouldn't like them to be exact. I would like them to be molded hair, maybe, for the Giants, so that the originals still have the rooted hair and the new ones have molded. So just, you know, little paint aspects and maybe molds that differentiate it just slightly enough that you can be like, this is I'm proud to say I've got an original and this is the new one. Like, I wouldn't be disappointed if the laser light figures didn't have the power
the light up,
if they had a translucent aspect about them, that would be fine.
Yeah.
Because just to be able to own a laser power He-Man and the Giants would just be fantastic. Yeah.
If I paraphrase Brian here, so I'm going to step into Brian's shoes and tell you what I think he would say. He has very little interest in doing reproductions of figures we've got in the past. So to give you an example, with the continuation of the vintage style line, he put out a Filmation version of He-Man and a Filmation version of Skeletor. That was his way to put He-Man and Skeletor out there without doing an exact replication of the vintage figures. So that's if you take that logic, he's got no interest in pure reproductions, because, you know, that's done and you go out and hunt that. That's the theme that I think we're going with. The other thing I'd say is, you know, he's got this, I guess, what I'd call, you know, if something was collectible and not many people have it, good for them. You know, that's what makes collecting fun and exciting. Now, having said that, I'm in your camp 100%, Ben, because I don't have the laser powers and I don't have the Giants. I've obviously got the classics versions of those, which is something, you know, but I want them in vintage and, you know, I'm not probably prepared to pay prices on the secondary market to get those. Now, if I think about Brian's logic, I don't necessarily need an exact, you know, replication of the original figures. Like you said, they can change them up enough that it keeps, you know, what happened in the 80s unique and original for those collectors, and they've got something, but gives other fans an opportunity to get into the line, because I would guarantee you those figures will sell well. So
even the Giants, even if they're 12-inch instead of the huge 16 or 18-inch that the original vintage ones were, the original vintage ones are taller than the classics ones.
They are,
So even if they were in the same scale as the classics ones, I would be totally cool with that. I've almost bought classics versions just to stick in my vintage line. I've been very close, but,
I couldn't. Couldn't agree more with you. It makes sense to me.
In a perfect world, that's my wish. Aside from the fantastic choices that Darren put out, like, totally 1,000% agree with all yours. But if it was my, you know, penny in the wishing well, that would be it. So
Look, I would welcome them revisiting those. I realize there are a lot of fans that don't have them, and I think they're so cool that it'd be great to see them made available to people who don't have access to them. And it's not just about the pricing points, as Trent alluded to. There's just not enough of them out there for everyone, even if everyone had that will and money and desire to get them. So this would be a way of making sure that lots of fans could get them at, you know, for a price that you know, wouldn't sink their budgets and also mean that people aren't missing out. So I'm all for that.
Yeah, I probably touched on my wish list a little bit with the discussion of the Errol McCarthy. So really, I'd want to see where the line was heading, and I'd want to see, I guess, that it's probably not the most popular decision. If it's a PowerCon exclusive, it means probably Super 7 didn't necessarily think it was something that they wanted to do. So I know my chances here are probably not high, but I guess I would have wanted to see that Wave 8 or Wave 7, you know, In terms of Lord Grasp and
there's
Hot
a
Shot.
Couple of other things that I know the license isn't currently there for, but a vintage style Dolph Lundgren He-Man and Frank Langella Skeletor would sit pretty nicely alongside cool. Blade, Gildor, and Sorod.
Yeah, and then probably you'd go Karg.
Of course, you'd go the whole 20 odd from the film, because I think there is a good 20 different designs when you're talking about all sorts of things from Pig Boy to you know, Skeletor's troops to those Castle Grayskull troops you see at the end. And I've always considered the Shearer concept to be designed to be figure worthy as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess the fact that license isn't available yet at all means we don't have those in classics and we don't have those in vintage. And that is one line you could theoretically do in both quite easily.
And
I think to that point, Brian is not scared of doing them in both because, you know, what did we see at New York? We saw sitting on the shelf a vintage style Filmation Hordak and a classic style Filmation Hordak. They're both there in the one release. So I don't think that's necessarily going to put Super 7 off the fact they can be done in both, just from what we've seen. Now,
I think you're right.
Maybe to pick out on Hordak, he's an A-lister, so maybe that doesn't translate. I don't know, but I think it's a bit of a litmus test for what we might see.
I actually watched the long version of the Pixel Dan interview with Brian again only a couple of days ago because I knew we were doing this podcast and I thought it would be good to be across it again. And what I found really interesting is he talked a lot about how deep and how wide classics had gone and how much more there was in it than there was in the vintage line. And now his thinking seemed to be that things needed to come back around to the 5.5 inch or 5.25 inch scale. So you can see there's the real fondness and nostalgia that he also shares for that vintage style buck that I think you could see some things offered. I wouldn't be surprised if there was the odd thing that was offered in that format first before classics, but you know, we'll have to obviously wait and see. But you could just see he had a fondness for that, and he thought that classics had gone very, very deep into it, and there were some characters in classics that had every right to be in vintage style.
Yeah, I mean, I made a list just because I wanted to get it down on paper. But look, I've touched on things you guys have said. Movie He-Man, Shirella. I mean, she just appears in some artwork on Powers of Grayscale. Fearless Photog. I mean, he should have been made.
He's a promise waiting to be made.
Castle Grayskull, man.
I mean, yeah, like Daniel Benedict would be all over that. But yeah, look, Queen Marlena, obviously. Something even like a Seahawk.
Yeah, Seahawk would be good. I did figure, I almost said Seahawk.
Adora, Cringer, Scorpia,
Madame Raz. You could do a list. Obviously, the Filmation rights have to come across, I imagine, before some of those can be done in the vintage style. But, you know, if Super 7 can get that deal done with Universal, then I don't see why we couldn't have a vintage Master Universe style Seahawk.
Yeah.
And maybe even a Bow and Glimmer and some of those really iconic. Let's be honest, there were a lot of people that, you know, back in the day would have been very happy with Princess of Power had it fitted in their Master Universe line, and what held them back was that they didn't think it quite did.
Yeah, well, listening to the He-Man.org roast Google dinner, I know Danielle Galerta made that exact point, you know, and I think actually the episode was shot or recorded before the reveals, and she was saying, I just want to, you know, that Shearer figure done in, you know, that vintage style, put on a classic red rock burst blister. Yeah. And I was listening to it after the reveals, and I'm like, oh, well, you've got your exact wish.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, but there's a big...
Coming to a store near you, Danielle.
Yeah, that's right. Here's one right for you. But you've said that all along, Darren, and that's what you'd like to see. So there's
yeah,
so much
I've been saying that to you since I've known you in 2002. Right, so. You're probably sick of me saying it now. But now that it's back in the news, you don't have any choice but to hear it.
That's right. But look, so much potential there. So now, great to get some insights into what you're thinking and where you want it to head. I guess we could turn, so we've had a bit of a discussion about, the continuation of the vintage 5.5 inch line. Wouldn't mind getting your thoughts, I guess, on maybe where sort of classics is heading and, I guess, Filmation subline. And we can touch on, you know, maybe call out what you thought of the figures that were released. What were your favourites maybe out of the continuation of the classics and the continuation of the Filmation lines? So maybe we'll start off with the continuation of classics, which was Hawk, or with the alternate Delora Head, Lodar from the mini-comics, Quake from the New Adventures toy line, and Fangor, who was designed by Axel Jimenez for the new Maddie Collector mini-comic series.
Yeah, so I'm particularly excited about all four. First off, it's an extremely diverse characters that we're getting. We're getting them from all over the universe and things, which I think is just fantastic. It ticks all the boxes and things. There's no bad ones in there. Like I want them all, and I'm happy to buy them all. For my personal favorite, even though I do love New Adventures, Delora, I've always wanted Stratos to have someone, so I think she's very important. Lodar from the mini comics has been quite fan demanded, and I think is overall a really, really cool character. But my personal favorite is Fangor. Like, I don't know if it's my obsession of snakes and things, and my throwback to me having the snakes is in the vintage toy line. And I did see Alex Jimenez's artwork of the Fangor and Black Mask and the other characters. As soon as that popped up on the screen, I knew it was a throwback to him, and I just lost it. I thought he looks so cool, and the fact that he comes with alternate heads, one with the fangs short and one with the long, so you can obviously deduce that if that was a vintage figure, the action feature would be his growing fangs going up and down, so you can sort of tell which direction they've put a lot of thought and such in it. He's the man at arms for the snake army. He comes with little tools and things, comes with that wicked looking bat, snake bat. He's just fantastic, and I just adore the fact that if this is the direction of brand new characters are going, this is, you know, right up my alley. I just absolutely love it, so can't talk him up enough, and I absolutely can't wait to be holding him in my hand. So yeah, well done, guys.
Much like Ben, I love the four of them. I think they've done a fantastic job of capturing a really diverse range of characters, as Ben alluded to. I really love the possibilities with Fangor. I love the idea that he's his opposite number is Man at Arms, that he's basically the brains behind the Snake Men, if you will. And I the vintage fan in me can't help but think maybe he's the explanation for Blast Attack and why he's aligned with the Snake Men. I really, really do like that. And that's, to me, what Masters of the Universe has always been about. And ever since childhood, you hear something and it just gets the imagination running away with you about how it all ties together and how it all leads back to something else that you've already seen within it. I love all of them because, as I said, I'm such a big fan of the property across its many spectrums. For me, my favourite is the Hawk/Delora. I agree with what Ben said about how it adds to Stratos, but I also think it adds to Masters of the Universe classics in a way that, you know, we wouldn't have dreamed of in 2008 when that line was announced, or the year before when we saw the prototype He-Man, that we are now getting into secondary characters among the factions of, you know, when I say the factions, I mean someone like the Bird People. Or, you know, and what does that mean for the potential for the line? If you can have and Hawk and Delora are really important parts, probably arguably the most in frequently seen across various media for any of those characters. But it does open up questions to the Insect People or other characters like that. I think it's fantastic. You know, the kinds of things that we grew up with. And I think the diversity of this lineup, as I said before, is phenomenal. But I'd also like everyone to consider the limitations that they had this time when they think about the diversity. They didn't have the Princess of Power deal done. not in terms of the film action characters anyway, the 1987 film rights, despite that, they've hit a home run with what they did have access to. And that's just amazing.
Yeah. No, well said, Darren. Quickly for my two cents, again, strong lineup and, you know, well done to Brian and the team for picking the roadmap, because that is such a strong choice of four characters. Again, I'm different. So, you know, Lodar for me was my favourite. Huge fan of that mini comic. It's got, you know, I always liked the mini comics where they had a unique villain, and it kind of made you want that villain to come out as a toy. And you know, Geldor, we got Geldor in the Liquid of Life, Liquid of Life. And so now to have Lodar to round out like a major villain in a mini comic is fantastic. He's got a great repertoire. Not only does he sort of have the magic, which I think is drawn on from the moon and the sun that sort of gives him his powers, but also he faces off with He-Man in battle in the sort of gladiator pit. And they have quite an action-packed, you know, there's not a lot of words spoken between them, but quite a brutal battle scene between the two, which I think is quite iconic and certainly stands out for me in terms of the mini comics that I remember.
Yeah, it certainly is fairly iconic. It came with a few different characters from memory. I remember getting mine with Orko, but I can remember kids at school had a Zodak that obviously came out later down the line with a different mini comic that had it, that had that, you know, Slave City mini comic. So, you know, it is definitely iconic. A lot of people had that growing up in the 80s. I think what Trent touched on is, you know, the importance of the independent villains, which were always a big part of the Masters of the Universe franchise, whether it be the mini comics or the cartoons or where, but never really had a presence in toy form until classics. And now I feel like we're getting quite a few of them, and, you know, we'll have quite a few of them, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see the way, or I thought before we got the figure, how would they deal with the paint scheme? Because essentially it is, you know, he's been drawn in black and white, and then they've almost just put this purple wash over the top. And I think he's turned out beautifully. He looks great with the way they've done the paint apps. Quite unique, and he's got it. You know, we're talking about it, he's almost got a sort of Shredder feel to him with the face mask and the spikes on the shoulder. I like. We had a bit of a conversation, or I've heard a bit of discussion around the reuse of the Beast Man, I guess spikes. I quite like that because I think that's how they would have done it in the vintage line. There's a lot of reuse in this line, so to me it makes sense to put the Beast Man spikes on there as his shoulder pads.
Yep,
makes sense. And yeah, and I think that mini comic, which is adapted from a Filmation episode, Tale of Two Cities,
that's right,
which also features another one of my sort of my demanded characters, which is Garn. Quite a different look in the mini comic to the Filmation episode. So it'd be interesting to see if and when Super 7 do get to a Garn figure, which version they'll go for. But again, another great heroic character that they could feature, you know, coming up.
Depends how well it goes. I guess they could have him in each line and address it that way by having two different Garns.
That would be my dream, but I don't want to get ahead of myself because he is, a fairly, you know, niche character.
Yeah.
And I guess that just led me to the final point I want to make is that, you know, us, when we debriefed and we saw these images for the first time, we came up with the same favourites. And it got me thinking, well, what a great selection of characters that we've got three, you know, huge Master Universe fans, and you know we're not all picking the same character. We've been touched. You know they're probably pretty close in terms of, you know, 1 to 4. It's not like, you know, there's one standout, but we've all picked different favorites. And you know, I think Quake, you know, the one that I guess we haven't chosen, you know, he's been executed really nicely, and I think he'll make a great figure. So well done to Super 7 for you know the roadmap, because it's sensational.
I think you're right. There's strong arguments that could be mounted for any one of those four as to why they should be the favourite, you know, which says it all about their choice.
Yeah, no, excellent. So then I guess we go to the Filmation part one, which is going to be the second wave in the four wave roadmap. And those that wave featured Teela. And I think I'm just so happy that we've got a really good version of the Filmation Teela. I mean, no disrespect to what the Horsemen did and what happened with the, you know, the tooling and the production of the Teela that came with the Talon Fighter. But this one just looks sensational. We got Man at Arms, who looks like he's just walked off the filmation cells. Triclops as well, and as we said, a really good version of Hordak. In that, you know, he's not. You know, I mean, I don't want to denigrate the version that Matty Collector did. It was, I guess, it made sense for what they were trying to do, but. It does, now that we've seen what a true Filmation Hordak can look like, it does seem like a bit of a cheap way out that they did give us the repaint, and they didn't really get necessarily the arm cannon 100% with what they could have done.
And so, the little bone armor and things, all those little aspects all add up to this new version to be it being so much more superior than the more or less repaint version that we got. So
I was always expecting it to be repainted, and I know Trent and I had this conversation, maybe even had it before it was revealed. I can't remember, but we certainly have had it a lot, because that was, I guess, Scott had forewarned us years in advance that was the direction Classics was going to go in. Classics was always going to be that, you know, if they would have done it in a reuse repaint kind of way in the vintage line, then that's what we'll be doing with Classics. And that's what they did. And I expected that. And I thought I was okay with it until I saw the pictures. So it's amazing how you think you can prepare yourself for something. But when I saw it, it just looked kind of wrong. And again, no disrespect to those who worked on it. You know, it's a legitimate version. And I think now that we've seen this one, it's going to feel better having that, because this is sort of like a bridging Hordak and a tribute to what a Filmation variant Hordak might have been in the vintage line. So I think in that way it's gonna be viewed on much better historically than what it would have been had this version not been offered.
Yeah.
But you know, I really, really am happy with it. And I think it's a really interesting choice that the two biggest concerned Filmation style offerings in the history of Matty have been addressed so quickly by Super 7 this time around, and that just, for me, that just said we're listening to the fans. You know, we know you wanted Teela revisited in the Filmation style. We know you wanted Hordak revisited in the Filmation style. And we're going to do them both, and we're going to offer them both in the very first go-round. We're not going to hold out on you. Then we can start talking about where to next. But we're going to address those things that you've been talking about for a number of years.
Righting the wrongs of the past.
Yes.
In one fell swoop, it's done.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So, gentlemen, do you have a particular favourite of those four? I know we've talked about the favourite classics.
I found it hard to actually pick between them. Look, for me, just seeing that Teela, Teela come off the screen was sensational. But having said that, I mean, look, they're all so strong, but just the Man at Arms. I mean, kudos to Eric or whoever from the Four Horsemen did that, because they've just captured not only the likeness, but almost the character from that Filmation in the look. It's just, I don't know how they've done it. And as well, the armor, to me, looks like it's embedded in the sculpt of the arms. It doesn't look like an attachment piece. It's very form-fitted. So when I just saw that detail, you know, they could have just gone, you know, cheaped out and sort of put the armor on top or done something that might have been a bit bulky. But it looks like they've really gone that extra step to make it cartoon accurate, which is just brilliant. But yeah, look, equally Hordak, you know, like, I think Ben, you can maybe talk a bit about Triclops. He did look probably the least one to sort of pop. Maybe it's the colors look, and that is a very accurate version of the color scheme that he's represented with. But I guess if you compare him to the original Lightness toy, yeah, there's maybe a bit of a, maybe he's just a bit muted, but other than that, look, they're all very strong in my opinion. But I'm going to probably just give it to Teela.
Where would you rank
that? So definitely Hordak. No disrespect to Teela and Man at Arms, which, as Trent pointed out, are just about perfect. As Hordak is always been. I love Hordak. I think he's awesome. And I actually, when I got my Matty Collector San Diego one, I actually was very quick to go and buy a custom head off eBay to replace it, because I really, it just didn't, I didn't fall in love with that head. And if I had more money, I definitely would have gone and got the extra bone armor as well. But the they weren't as plentiful as the heads were at the time, and I've never went down that path. But since day one, I've had a custom head on my Hordak from the Matty Collector version. And just to get this new one from Super 7, which is near perfect, it's fantastic. It's just like that finishing touches. He comes with an extra imp, which I'm super excited about. So I'm going to stick that imp in my vintage line. I've already decided that.
Nice. Good call. I like he blend in perfectly. Yeah. Yeah.
So I just little things like that. I love doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And getting the chest.
The chest, yeah.
It's just a dream come true. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would consider myself to have a very, very complete classics line. The chest is one thing I don't have. So, look... you know, I think this is great. There's going to be people out there, and look, it's a legitimate point of view that say, you know, that was a con exclusive and this is diluting the specialness of it. But for me, I want, you know, I want the chest.
Completeness of the overall line.
Yeah. I would submit that they're two different items. They're very similar, but I'd submit they're two different items. Obviously, one's the Super 7 item and one's the Matty Collector San Diego exclusive. If Super 7 don't put it in a baggie and don't package it separately to Hordak, then to me it becomes even more different and even more pronounced as to what the difference is. So I don't think it dilutes too much. As far as my favorite, I have to give it to Teela as well. That was the one that just screamed out to me. I didn't have the reaction to Triclops that perhaps you two did. Maybe because I've always thought he was... a really cool villain, and I've always liked his character, but also I tend to agree with Trent. It is quite accurate to the screen presentation of Triclops, and I'm really open to getting different versions of these characters. You know, I'd love to see a 2000X Triclops down the line, a mini comic Triclops. You know, there's a whole range of things. Obviously, I don't mean in 5 minutes' time because we've just had a new version of Triclops, but I'd love to see it. The line have that kind of legs that you could, you know, go through the motions and get all those versions of, you know, the iconic characters, particularly the early ones that had so many different designs. Some of the later characters were more consistent.
Yeah.
And just one more thing I'd like to touch on this Filmation Classics line. So I don't know if I was recorded on this podcast as saying it, but I've definitely said it to both Trent and Darren here, is that... I was almost ready to not buy it. Like, before I'd even seen it, I'd already committed to myself that space is... I'm very conscious of space and display areas and money as well. I'd like to try and save some money for once and things. And I decided maybe I'll skip the Filmation because I've got my He-Man, I've got my Skeletor, I've got the core characters. Before seeing them revealed, I couldn't envision them being too much different from the regular classics versions. And for that reason, I was going to skip them. I was a changed man once I saw the reveals. I wanted all of them. They were so well done and so respectful to their Filmation counterparts that even myself, who's got... I think 3 or 4 versions of Man at Arms now, I now need that one as well because my collection will never be complete if I don't have that perfect depiction of that Super 7 Filmation Classics Man at Arms. Just a name, you know, one.
So. And that's a really interesting point because some of those characters we have seen time and time again and they weren't necessarily known for having exorbitant variants in the vintage line of those secondary characters. But I think you've highlighted something. They're different enough that you feel like you're missing something if you don't.
Yeah. Amen.
All right, so we'll move on to, I guess, the final, I guess, versions of classics, which are the PowerCon exclusives. So I guess just to quickly touch on the background of these figures, Val Staples or JVS3 from the He-Man.org forums, each year he's been running a PowerCon, which is, I guess, a convention specifically for He-Man. It's had various iterations of bringing in other properties as well, but but this year it's going to be a He-Man convention. That occurs, yeah, once a year. And last year was the first time Val was able to source some exclusives from Mattel. So we got the red mini comic version of Beastman. We got the Camo Khan, which was, I think, a Top Toys...
Best version.
Brilliant version. And we got the green mini comic version of Granomir. This year we've got 2 3-packs. The first 3-pack is, I guess, what you'd almost term a sort of a mini comic themed 3-pack, which consists of Trapjaw, mini comic Trapjaw, mini comic Stratos, as well as Prince Adam, and he'll actually come with the, because he's illustrated by Alfredo Alcala, so he'll come with the Ular or Alcala-style He-Man head, which is cool. And then we're getting the Errol McCarthy, or I guess maybe what we term sort of where the line was heading, if it had continued. So we'd had images that we'd seen in black and white drawn by the illustrator of Errol McCarthy, which would have been the card backs. And we got, they've got names. So
the
there's
mashups. Yeah, they're essentially mashups.
The mashups. So they're reusing parts from the vintage line. There's no new parts. We're getting characters, Hotshot, Lord Grasp, and Horror. And we'll talk a little bit about what they're comprised of in terms of their mashup parts. But I thought we might just start, we'll go around and talk about the mini comic 3-pack.
Yeah, I'm really loving the mini comic 3-pack. I find it absolutely fascinating that PowerCon second year, as you said, Trent, with PowerCon Master Universe Classic exclusives and mini comics, again in year two, seem to be a running theme. We had red mini comic Beastman last year and green Granomir. And that tradition continues. I'm a huge fan of both 3-packs, but I probably lean more towards the mini comic 3-pack just because I guess I feel like I know those characters more and I know quite a bit about that representation of Master of the Universe. I'm a huge, huge fan of the He-Man character and Adam in all of those characters in all their iterations and He-Man minus Adam. So I find any different, unique, iteration really interesting, and I find that to be incredibly historic because that, to me, seems to be the origin of the Adam character. Adam, as he was presented in the DC Comics miniseries, starting with the versus Superman storyline, and
DC
also,
presents.
Yeah, the DC Comics miniseries back in the 80s and then branching into the mini comics after that. So I see that as sort of the origin for the character, and he's presented in a very different way, both personality-wise and visually, to how he was in filmation and other media following that. So I find that really interesting, and I'm also a huge fan of the Trapjaw and the Stratos in that pack. I just think, it screams... Grabs that, and I like the filmation stuff, but I think we're getting some really nice variants. I feel we're getting some really nice mini comic variants. We've got the Temple of Darkness Sorceress, the Preternian disguised He-Man. We've got mini comic iterations of He-Man, the Blue Merman, the Alcala heads for Skeletor, mini comic Beastman, and now this pack just branches out, and you start to think there's almost little lines emerging of your key characters in every iteration, bar the 1987 film, which, hint, if any rights can be obtained, I'd be very grateful. But, I'm really loving that. I love the other 3-pack as well. And what, looking at what might've been, had the line gone on. I know some fans, there's a debate as to, whether or not they liked the design shown on the Errol McCarthy art backs last year and that, whether or not it was too much of a mashup. It's not without historical roots, though. It is where the line was going. The line was famous for repaints and reuse and that. Look at Mossman and, his ties Stinkor, to Beastman and Stinkor and his ties to Merman. It's not without, some direct connection.
Well said, Darren. For me, as I said before, I've decided to go with the Filmation Subline, and I'm dedicated to that. But because I'm, you know, trying to wean back my collection and things, I've decided to skip this these 2-3 packs. I think some one or two of the characters from each are pretty cool, but I'm not dedicated to all three from each line. More so for the I do prefer the mini comic one. I do like the Stratos and Trapjaw. I think they're the two highlights for me personally, and I would like, given the chance, I would have bought them individually. The Atom I could give or take without too much conscience, you know, issues. Where the Earl McCarthy three packs, so I recognize them. I remember seeing the we shared the images of a year or so ago when they popped up online. So I was very familiar with the artwork and what those three characters mashed up with using different body parts. I was very knowledgeable of what they potentially look like, but of course they were given to us in illustrated in black and white. So you paint colors in your head. You see customs online of people on Photoshop and actual people grabbing the vintage toy lines and mashing them together and giving them their own splash of colors and things. So I had this preconceived idea of what potentially their color schemes were going to be. And then seeing the PowerCon 3-pack, they were couldn't be further away from the color schemes that I had preconceived. And that was enough for me to easily skip that altogether. I'm disappointed in myself that I probably won't own a mini style Stratos and Trapjaw, but I could leave the Earl McCarthy 3-pack and not worry too much. And that's just my personal thoughts. So, but you know, hurrah to anyone that falls in love with them. Like all, you know, fantastic. It's fantastic to see the line grow so much that we can see these very underground characters in proper figure form. Yep. I think that's great.
Yeah. For my take, I was a little bit surprised when I'll talk first about the mini comic 3-pack that we got unique sculpting. So I'll point out, I guess, the bits that I guess I saw in terms of Stratos. We got the belt, so a unique belt part that looks like it's almost an additional piece that will go on top of an attachable piece, and the neck bird-like feather piece as well looked to be totally newly sculpted. So that's really cool. The fact we're getting some new tooling and some new sculpting on what they showed us in PowerCon exclusive year one was all repaints with no retooling. When you actually go to the Trapjaw, his head looks quite different. He's got the spikes on the side. I don't know if I've put it next to the actual Trapjaw. The jaw might be a little bit different, and the way that the helmet and the little hook thing that he's got, that sort of the circle on the top of his head, looks a bit different. And he's got what looks to me to be a new belt piece. And I'd even go without, you know, being 100% sure here, is that the crotch piece is actually different. It looks like, you know, he's got quite a unique look in that mini comic where he's got these almost striped, yes, underpants. And if I'm seeing it correctly, it looks like they've actually sculpted those stripes in and then painted sort of on top of the sculpting. So that could potentially be a unique piece. Adam looks like a straight repaint. What I find quite interesting about the Adam is that if you want a grey figure, so grey being, I guess, Hero's alter ego, you're getting a lot closer to being able to put a sort of a Hero head on that Prince Adam body, and he'll have the skin tone, flesh like I think grey has. The vest will be a different colour, but you're getting closer to a grey. You could customise it probably a little bit easier, but you know, do you want to wait and see if we get an official grey release down the track?
I was just going to say, I'm hoping no one needs to customise a grey. I'm hoping it's in the pipeline. It's for me, it's my most wanted Powers of Grayskull figure this point on. Followed ever so narrowly behind it by Oracle from the 2002 cartoon from that Powers of Grayskull, King Grayskull episode. Yep. They would be the two things that I'm really hanging for in Powers of Grayskull. And love to see those things happen in both the classics and the new vintage style sequel line.
Well, they can do them in both, and I think, you know, again, with the Errol McCarthy 3-pack, you know, they can do them in both as well. I mean, it makes sense to do them in the vintage style because that's where the line was heading.
Just getting onto the Errol McCarthy thing, sorry to cut you off, I just had a question. I don't know the answer to this. I have had a bit of a look online to see if I could find out, but I haven't found anything. Does anyone know whether or not it's been discussed or not where the colour choices of colours came from? Is that something that harkens back to the colours Mattel were thinking about going with back in the 80s, had the line continued, or are these colours that have been chosen?
It's a very good question. I guess Val ultimately has had discussions with Brian to, you know, negotiate what characters he can do as PowerCon exclusives. So whether he's had obviously some involvement in the character selection, whether that extends to then colour choice or whether that's something the Horsemen were sort of given rein to, you know, I guess I suspect Brian's probably taken a back step in this one because it's sort of, yep, while he's got the license and he will facilitate it, it's really, I guess, a figure that he's doing for Val. So you think Val would have, I guess, final say in that. And Val did provide some comments around when Lord Grasp's claw was done in entirely black, there were some Photoshop versions of showing it with a continuation of the yellow stripe to match the arm. There were some about five or six different versions. There was an all-yellow version of the claw, and I think Val posted, and actually that's a mistake, he should have had the yellow stripe down the arm. So I suspect Val's got some input into what they look like. I do want to make a point. I guess my view is that these are not inspired by where Mattel was heading. One, that could be because coloured versions didn't exist, or if they did, they haven't been recovered. But if you look at the way that Errol McCarthy has, I guess, drawn the black and whites, I'll point a few things out. So Lord Grasp's head in the Errol McCarthy is white and his body is black, right? To me, that indicates when they were going to colour it, they were going to put, you know, a yellow over the head, right? Or a lighter tone. Same when you actually look at, I think, his claw. His claw is not black. His arm is black, but the claw is white. So to me, that lends itself again to say, well, the claw would have been a lighter colour. The actual Lord Grasp is essentially, his head is predominantly black with yellow sort of around the lips, and he's got this yellow sort of crest at the top of his head. That indicates to me that's a variation from what they were thinking, I think, when Errol McCarthy illustrated those. Because if he was going to have a black head and a black claw, why not put the colour in black, right? Why not shadow or ready to go? So that to me indicates a departure from the vision.
The source.
Yeah. Now, what's to say that when they colour it, they could have also coloured it black? I don't know. But, you know, I was, when I saw those images pop up, I have to have these figures. And I think there were a couple more that popped up, which we haven't got, the white ninja, which, you know, there could be some debate as to whether that's ninja. I like to think it's a good version, heroic version
and,
of ninja.
Yeah, an opposite number. I like that too. Yeah. I've always liked that about Masters of the Universe. There are so many opposite numbers.
Yeah. Snake Eyes versus Storm Shadow style.
Exactly. And the other one that I really wanted to see, and I'm maybe a little bit disappointed didn't get in this 3-pack, was the Horde Trooper with the Rat-Law head,
I would have... White Ninja... Yeah. Horde Trooper with snake head and some other fancy character. I would be all in for that.
You see, I tend to think that makes sense to not have them as exclusives, though, because they're the kinds of things that, you know, Super 7 could potentially go another route with. And my understanding, you know, with the PowerCon stuff, is it's stuff that Mattel and now Super 7 don't intend to bring out. You know, that's what's available to pick in terms of characters to pick from. Fandom-owned characters that, you know, the license holder, in this case Super 7, aren't planning to produce anytime soon, if at all. Now, you can't tell me that a Snake Trooper, Snake Horde Trooper mashup wouldn't sell.
No.
I mean, that ticks so many boxes, it's not funny. I'm all about character and story more than probably most fans, and how do they relate to the character story, but those are two that you don't really... you've got that in your background. We already know the links between the Snake Men and the Horde from the Princess of Power cartoon and the Master of the Universe minicomics and newspaper strips and all that sort of stuff. So we already know about how they're tied together. So, you know, the Snake Trooper, Horde Trooper thing doesn't look outrageous at all.
No.
And that would sell. And I reckon White Ninja could potentially sell too because it's familiar looking enough while still being different. So I can see why perhaps they went on the table.
Yeah.
For a PowerCon. But great way to put out some of the other things that perhaps may not otherwise be put out.
Yeah.
And you know, sensational. I just hope they're offered to people who aren't going to the con.
I suspect they will be. I mean, look, Val did it last year. It was probably a way he could supplement some income to sort of, you know, yeah, go along with ticket sales as well. So it makes sense to continue that. I don't know because it hasn't been announced, or if it has, I've missed it. But yeah, just I guess to round out that conversation, I think Ben summed it up really nicely in terms of the color schemes. My take, if I had to rank them, I think the Hotshot for me was probably the winner. In terms of the way they've done this colour scheme. Not anything, I guess, what I was expecting, but I was almost expecting a VAC. They might have gone down the VAC metal path, and it might have been a silver VAC metal, you know, to sort of be to Hero's gold VAC metal, because it is utilising the Hero armour piece, which I think is really cool. I think the name choice is excellent for Hotshot, because they've got the H, essentially, on the chest. I really, really like what they've done with the crossbow, making it the translucent red, and the Rio Blast gun that attaches to his right hand, being that clear red, and that, again, feeds into the name of Hotshot. I like the fact they made him a Hispanic character, so a bit more diversity into the line. Really, really cool. And in a way, it's a really clever reuse of the Fisto head, because he looks different enough, having a different ethnicity to sort of make the Fisto head work in that context. So I think Hero to me is a mature color palette that maybe Mattel wouldn't have used back in the 80s. They would have used some more, you know, colors that pop a little bit more. Yeah, brighter colors. It's very, but I think I love it. I think it looks great. The other two for me are very, they don't almost fit the aesthetic of a vintage style color scheme. And I guess if you just sort of, to me,
That's why I asked you if you knew if there's any historical link.
Yeah. I mean, that's just my personal taste. Look, there's obviously a lot of diversity in the line, the way colors are applied, but you take a character like, I'm going to compare Lord Grasp to Mosquito, because my view of Lord Grasp, when you look at the Errol McCarthy, is he probably would have had a darkish torso and a darkish body, and maybe even a brownish sort of cloak or something that might have been quite muted. Compare that to maybe Mosquito, who has similar muted colours. He's got blacks, he's got browns, he's got the silver boots. But then you look at his head, and his head is a bright red colour. Just so you've got a muted character, yes, and that's fine, but you've got a part of him that is coloured in a colour that pops.
And a large portion of him.
Yeah, yes. Large portion. So I think Lord Grasp was getting there, but the way I would have done it is I would have done the whole head yellow and the whole claw yellow to make that element of it pop. So, look, that's just, you know, I don't want to have any disrespect to the colourist that's worked on these. You know, obviously they're trying to make a colour scheme that works for the figure and not necessarily be too outlandish. Some of the joy and the love in those color schemes of the originals is that they are outlandish, you know, that they do use very bright colors. And I think, you know, even on the horror character, which is essentially the Whiplash with Mosquito boots, and it's got the trapjaw arm, you know, we're getting another black trapjaw arm. You know, we're getting the legs are essentially Mosquito legs without the red on them. I think they could have been a bit bolder. You know, when you look at the way you got a character that had reused parts in the vintage line, you think about Merman turning into Stinkor. Yeah, vastly different choices of colour scheme. Beastman to Mossman, you know, they're at opposite ends of the colour spectrum. To then get a character that reuses Mosquito's legs, and Mosquito's legs haven't been reused before, to have almost the identical colour choice of Mosquito, minus, you know, the red, just to me lacked a bit of creativity. I felt they should have gone something very different to differentiate it from Mosquito. Look, it's just my two cents. But look, I'll still be picking up that set. I'm almost tempted to pick up a second set with the intent of customizing them to a color scheme that I think is maybe a bit more fitting. So I'll see if I sort of go down that path. But yeah, I like them. I probably am a little bit different to you guys. I put them maybe ahead of the mini comic 2-pack. But that's just because I connected so strongly with those designs. And to me, it was a taste of where the line was going. So I really love that aspect of sort of having something new, albeit, yeah, their mashups and their reuse. So on that note, we will probably wrap up this episode of Toy Power. I'd like to say a huge thank you to Darren and Ben for coming around and sharing your thoughts. It's been great having you around and really great to get back into Toy Power after a bit of a break. So, yeah, thanks so much to you guys, and thanks to your listeners for tuning in again.
Thank you very much, Trent, for the invite, as per usual, and thank you also to our listeners for coming back. Hope to talk toys with you all again soon.
This was another exciting recording session. Many interesting insights from both of you guys. Yeah, thanks for everyone that's listened to this. And hope to see you around the airwaves soon. This is Ben signing off.